I thought you were not a trick-or-treater. I'm afraid I'm bone dry on candy, but there's always plenty of leftover pumpkin guts. Well, technically, these are people guts, sprinkled with a little cinnamon, nutmeg, a dash of clove. Sometimes I add a little whipped cream if I'm feeling fancy. Oh, you distracted me. I'm just putting the final touches on my Jack Kevorkian lantern. It's always so hard to get the eyeballs out. Well, I can tell you have the right taste for the tasteless. I will say, though, there is a science to the art of the scare. But it's no trick when I say I have a special treat for you, my thrill-seeking Neanderthal. Here it is. A seasonal indulgence that'll raise the hairs on the back of your neck and the worms from their decomposing coffins. Ricky Olsen thought himself head Hellraiser of Halloween. He played vicious tricks and claimed all the treats as his own. Alas, he forgot to check his candy. Sometimes the most decadent bite hides a secret as sharp as a razor. All manner of things wear a mask, because evil is always slithering beneath the surface in a tale I like to call All Hallows' Edge.
Happy Halloween, fuckers! Ricky yelled, whipping the rubber baby with an M80 strapped to its chubby belly from the window of his ancient fox-bodied Mustang Cobra. The pack of unsuspecting costume bar crawlers scattered as the fake infant landed a few feet in front of their group like a wartime grenade. Pumpkin pails packed with ice, booze, and oversized candy bars splattered the sidewalk. One of the guys, a muscle-bound giant in Spartan warrior garb, shouldered his sexy Pennywise date into the street as he took cover, or half-dozen red balloons lost to the sky. Their bumbling improv act was sweet, but what really carved a smile into Ricky Olsen's blotched, pockmarked face were the screams when the wick burnt out, the colossal boom that followed. He'd made sure to fill the little shit with stage blood before giving it baby's first suicide vest, a last-minute stroke of genius that did not disappoint. The geyser of red almost brought a tear to his eye. Cries filled the air like distraught birdsong. The door to the adjacent bar flew open, hitting the outside wall with enough force to knock the strung-up skeleton passively observing the scene to the ground. One of the staff stepped out, wooden back covered in old hardcore stickers slung over his shoulder. He looked up and down the street twice before noticing Ricky's relic idling at the corner. "That's the guy," yelled a woman, adjusting the pale beehive of her Marie Antoinette wig. Ricky pulled the black ski mask down and peeled out, leaving the upset partiers to sober up on the thick black smoke belching from his tailpipe. He watched the scene recede in the rearview, just in time to catch the Neanderthal with the bat sprint into the road in pursuit of this big bad wolf. Retaliation was short-lived, though, as he jumped back between two parked cars to avoid getting flattened by an SUV, gunning it down the road at the same time. Its lit up undercarriage a streak of pulsing blue light that cut into the oncoming lane to blow by Ricky and vanish into the night. "Dumbass," Ricky sneered. With greasy, chip-dusted fingertips, he reached down and cranked the victory tunes. Blast beats provided a backbone for down-tuned guitars to ride in a barrage of instrumental torment that rattled the car's fragile frame. He pushed down on the accelerator, punched the peeling headliner in morbid celebration, punctuating every hit with the hearty, "Brutal!" It's been his pump-up mantra for the last few months, a way to remind himself that he had the stones to do what others couldn't, bring true horror back into the holiday. There was time to kill, so Ricky took the closest freeway on-ramp, confident, exhausted commuters wouldn't think twice about someone in full-blown tactical gear behind the wheel. Tonight, Ricky was just another man joining the traffic parade, on his way to a night of drunken debauchery, mid-tier horror trivia, and too much jalapeno cheese dip. They were partially right, but Ricky's aspirations ran deeper than cheap scares elicited by blasting an air horn in someone's face while they stumbled down darkened hallways, or jack-in-the-boxing teens from behind a fog machine in a cheapo mask. His dream was to cultivate real horror. That had been the entire purpose of his short-lived DIY haunt, Ripper's Row. Funded with most of the inheritance money his folks left behind after Ricky's dad took their Jeep for a test flight off a mountain in Northern California, Ricky converted their prized two-story suburban temple into an extreme scare attraction. Made up to look like the streets of 1888 East London, Ricky envisioned each bedroom as its own torture chamber. His small group of hired actors, cherry-picked from local theater troupes and including himself, would dress in Jack the Ripper garb as they took participants to the edge, only letting up when their screams hit a raw, animalistic pitch. Ricky's brainchild tasted existence for one night only. The Rippers were going easy on the victims. He could tell by their smug grins, the lack of tears and confusion when they stepped into the final room. Aggravated that staff weren't immersing themselves in their roles like the thespians they proclaimed to be, Ricky doubled down. He blackbagged everyone that stepped in, wrestled them to the filthy mattress on the floor, and into the restraints. Lit only by shimmering candlelight, he dragged the dulled blades across every inch of exposed skin, explaining their imminent dissection in gory detail. It helped, but it wasn't enough. It was never enough. Finally, some sass-mouthed twerp egged him on too much through the spit-sodden hood, flung insults about how he probably blew his wad doing this job because all his dates manifested as bootlegged hentai. Before he could stop himself, Ricky clamped both hands around the boy's scrawny neck, giving him a crash course in asphyxiation. In retrospect, not the smartest opening night move, but all Ricky could figure was he'd blacked out. Not that it mattered. It didn't change the fact that he'd gone overtime, and another attendee wandered in to witness the assault. It would have been good word of mouth, too, had the little narcs not gotten the row shut down, the vague waiver his only golden ticket to avoiding real jail time. Windows down, grindcore up, Ricky tore through an upscale residential neighborhood. The fake severed head poorly bolted to the cobra's hood bounced from side to side, an overzealous tourist taking in the sights, while kaiju-sized goblins and skeletons loomed over the community like ghoulish sentries. He sped up when he saw a family dressed as McDonald's characters crossing the street, slamming on the brakes just before the car bowled them over, earning him a very pointed, "What the fuck?" in the form of Daddy Grimace throwing his hands into the air before hustling his Happy Meals onto the sidewalk. Ricky revved the engine until they were out of sight. He knew he needed to be cautious here. Unlike the gaggle of uninspired drunks earlier, these people wouldn't bother with righteous vigilante justice. They'd just smash 911, and that'd really kill the vibe of this night, especially when this was just a pit stop on the destruction tour. Still, he couldn't resist snagging a few snaggle-toothed pumpkins and drop-kicking them across manicured lawns like it were an Olympic sport before checking the time and deciding to head out to start his headlining performance. The Cobra's headlamps punched through the night, lighting up the rutted road bordered by arthritic trees, their distorted limbs seemingly reaching out to one another. Despite dodging lockup, the Row incident made him leprous to any reputable horror mazes throughout the city. Couldn't even land an interview for ticket taker, much less scare actor. Fine, he thought. If they wanted to wallow in the stagnant stew of regurgitated themes, that was their choice, and their loss. However, when Ricky saw the flyer tacked to the bulletin board in the back of a local brewery, announcing auditions for Moonlight Nursery's first haunted maze, cutely named Garden of the Dead, Ricky saw it as a sign to keep pursuing his passion for frightening people. Situated in an unincorporated farming town a few miles west of the freeway and down a long dirt driveway, Moonlight Nursery was its own minute ecosphere set behind a massive steel gate that screamed hippie co-op, or cult if you chatted up the locals. To Ricky, though, they seemed more like modern flower power children with an interest in body mods and tattoos than dead-eyed religious zealots. He showed up for the late afternoon audition with a confident stride in his step, making his way to the weather-beaten bungalow that overlooked the garden rose, its many windows blacked out with heavy curtains. A young man in unstrapped overalls jumped back as he rounded the corner of a small grow house, dropping the bundle of winter radishes he'd been holding. Ricky watched him collect the spilled veggies through the eyes of the pig mask, hoping the tension in his well-built shoulders was because he could sense the authenticity of the mask. Knew on a primal level that this was the real deal, snatched off of a carcass post-slaughter that Ricky shelled out quite a bit of cash for. Fading sunlight glinted off the silver studs that framed the man's face as he stood and hurriedly walked off. Several feet away, hands deep in the earth, a woman with thick dreads piled high atop her head like a viper's nest watched him. Her gaze intense, as if trying to psychically communicate that should the pig man decide to change course, she'd have no problem burying a trowel in his throat. She seemed like a challenge, too, given the strip of puffy scar tissue running up her torso to disappear under the gray fabric of her sports bra. Ricky snickered to himself, knocked on the open door. "To your left," said a voice from what he assumed was the living room. "Please, shut the door behind you." The house held a thick musk reminiscent of cheap weed and wet soil. A single low-watt bulb oozed a pool of yellow haze that barely reached the green shag carpet from a lamp in the corner. Where there weren't stacks of books on herbology, chemistry, and even some yellowed pages of vintage smut, there were heavy-duty aquariums filled with dirt. The oversized lavender jacket Ariel wore seemed to swallow the owner as she sat in a high-backed chair made of red leather and maple, a warped shape in the dimly lit room gesturing for him to sit in the chair across from her. "Have a seat." Like the other folks he'd seen coming in, she had her own collection of face jewelry. Thin chains hooked from nostril to ear rested against her cheeks. Copper rings snuggled against each other on her lower lip. What really stood out, however, was the subdermal implant in the shape of a loose bow sitting just underneath the skin of her chest. Was it bad lighting, Ricky thought, or did it wriggle every few seconds? Unlike the people outside, Ariel didn't appear fazed by his appearance. She observed him clinically, nodding and muttering to herself about the attention to detail. Finally, she crossed her legs, smiled, and with all sincerity said, "Thank you for coming, but you're not what we're looking for." Resisting the urge to explain why she was making the wrong decision, to tear down the worms pinned to velvet canvas and fancifully framed above where she sat, to rip that condescending smile from her half-shadowed face, Ricky slowly stood up and left. But he didn't forget. Damp with sweat despite this fall chill, Ricky kept that smile in mind as he parked the car on the most even patch of land he could find and started making his way through the trees, stopping at an abandoned Mazda RX-7 he'd found scouting the surrounding area a few days prior. Likely left behind by one of Moonlight's prior residents and gutted on the inside, Ricky used it to stash his grand party favors. Buried underneath fast food wrappers scabbed with old food, unwashed clothes, and Ziplocs packed with more fireworks was one of his oldest airsoft guns, all black and modeled after an M4 carbine. Super realistic except for the orange tip that he screwed off and trashed long ago. It was well after midnight, but across the hood he could see the rhythmic wink of violet lights strung up throughout the nursery. Laughter and playful shouts intermingled with a synthwave remix of Pickett's Monster Mash. The denizens of Moonlight Nursery were no doubt kicking their feet up, sipping on whiskey spice cider, complaining about shitty guests. Resting the gun up against his shoulder, Ricky slipped his scuffed shooting glasses on and posed for a selfie to commemorate the moment. "Oh, fuck," he muttered, blinking spots from his eyes. Even through his flash-burned retinas, Ricky marveled at the monster looking back at him. Black grease paint slathered his face underneath the ski mask. The armor gave the impression of a monstrous gym-sculpted physique, which would be a deterrent should anyone decide to swap out their undead attire for a cape. The moniker he'd given himself, threaded across the left chest of his flak jacket in bold, crimson cursive, seemed to glow in the camera's flash. He wasn't nationalistic, but every good villain needed a kitschy name, and what better than one that played on modern-day fears, the Patriot. He quickly typed out, "This Halloween, justice is brutal," hit share to the Patriot's 22 followers, and felt a spark of excitement hit him like a freshly juiced car battery. already creating a brand, already putting in the work to market himself. Shit, maybe he'd get a movie deal if it went viral. A new contender in the patriotic slasher genre. Suck on that, Ronnie Reagan and Master Sergeant Sam Harper. He stuffed a handful of bottle rockets into his backpack, hoofed it out of the trees and across the dirt lot carpeted with tangled weeds, shattered bottles, and half-smoked cigarettes. The music grew louder. Good time hoots and hollers morphed into voices. His heart thrummed in his chest. He shoved himself between a split in the wooden fence at the corner of the property, quickly ducked into the shadowed hollow of a poorly constructed snack bar that sat several yards away from where those that had shunned him were having a grand old time. Bags of store-bought popcorn sat in a box to his left. On the right were dozens of stacked paper cups and a few gallon jugs with brownish apple slices stuck to the bottom. Their bodies may have been cloudy and distorted through the eye protection, but Ricky knew all he had to do was pull the trigger and bedlam would ensue. He couldn't have asked for a better setup. This time, a tear did glide down his cheek. Eager, hands trembling, he produced a pack of matches. Goose pimples rippled his meaty arms. He dragged the match heads down the strike strip in a single fluid motion, lit as many of the bent wicks as he could, before retreating behind the shack, palms so slick with sweat he damn near dropped the rifle. Seconds later, the bag erupted in snaps and whistles. The first bottle rocket took flight, corkscrewing into the rotted roof. Sparks bathed the inside. A succession of booms followed, rocking the already questionable carpentry. Then came his trumpet call, his wrestling intro music, screams. "Fucking brutal," he whispered. Ricky rushed to the front of the now blazing snack hut, letting the faux M4 rip. Pellets hosed down all those unlucky enough to be within range, punching into limbs, nipping the meat of upraised hands trying to shield their faces. Ricky kept his finger tight on the trigger. It was glorious. He moved forward, hoping to drive them back, almost begging them to break into a run so he could give chase, complete his transformation into a full-blown slasher. But they were tougher than he'd given them credit for. They were braving Ricky's maelstrom head-on, which said a lot for the perseverance considering there was no way he hadn't clipped a piercing or pinged an eyeball. It wasn't until the weapon clicked empty that he realized something was off. What he thought were frightened screams now sounded like joyous roller coaster shouts, followed by conversations carrying on as if a Reaper in riot gear hadn't arrived to unleash hell upon them. He yanked the eyewear off for a better look. The strobes beyond guttered and died along with the music, leaving only the flames dancing across the crackling pyre behind him to paint everything in an alternating splashes of orange and black. Cautiously, he stepped toward the frozen silhouettes until he stood face to face with a mannequin, its face peppered with tiny holes. Duct taped to its neck was a wireless speaker. Ricky cocked his head to listen. Static, mangled studio audience laughter barked in his ear. He jerked away, jabbed the barrel into the mannequin's chest, knocking it over. What the f? Pain drilled his skull. Flecks of gold bloomed in his vision. Before he could get a hold of the situation, another blow struck him in the clavicle, forcing him to drop the gun. Woozy, Ricky tried to find his footing, swung around with a sloppy left hook that really showed the air what he was about. "You can handle this. It's foreplay for someone as tough as you. Lean into it." The crunchy laughter from the speakers grew louder. He sucked in a breath, held it, pivoted to deliver a stunning jab to the attacker. Just in time to see the white-blue snap of electricity before the taser blasted his neck, drove him to his knees, and into the black. When Ricky opened his eyes, he found himself immersed in shifting darkness, a lone ship in an undulating midnight ocean. Stomach acid flirted with the back of his throat at the slightest movement. His neck felt like it had been cooked with an acetylene torch, and he was pretty sure someone had driven a railroad spike into his shoulder. He tried to remember what had led him here, could only conjure a void. Slowly, his sight began to clear, and Ricky found himself looking up at the open sky. This far out from the city, away from the light pollution, you could see more than a few stars. And not that he'd ever admitted out loud, wouldn't be on brand for the Patriot. It was beautiful. reminded him of sitting in the planetarium as a kid. Before his parents retreated into themselves, started making those weird charts that assessed every risk that came with stepping outside. He shook the memories away before the spiraling started. With some effort, Ricky lifted his head up, keeping his eyes closed until existence no longer felt like being strapped to a tilt-a-whirl. When the room ceased wobbling, it was a godsend, but it didn't change the fact that he was naked, manacled at the wrists and ankles to four stubby metal posts driven into the concrete, and spread eagle for all the world to gaze upon, which at the moment were several iron sconces resembling upturned crow's feet that bordered a massive split in the wall that ran from the floor to where the ceiling used to be. Still too proud to call for help, Ricky tried to pull his wrist free. A burst of pain ignited his busted shoulder, encouraging him to focus on his left hand. Fist balled, he pulled as hard as he could on the restraint, pausing every few seconds to breathe, gnash his teeth, and jerk the wrist back and forth. Exhaling in a full-chested growl, trying to use as much of his body as he could, Ricky only succeeded in helping the jagged cuff dig a shallow trough in his wrist. Amused chuckles trickled over from somewhere behind him. Honey-colored light etched into the darkness from candles now being carried into the room. The sound of bare feet lightly slapping the concrete. Then, Ariel's face came into view. Wearing only the lavender coat, she smiled, waggling the buck knife in her right hand. "Turns out, I think we might have a job for you after all." She stepped away, reaching into the opening to scoop out a heavy clump of ink-black dirt that she held carefully while lowering herself onto his chest, dug her knees into his armpits. She held the mound to his quivering lips. The scent of cherries and earth slithered into his nostrils. "Open your mouth." Ricky summoned what scraps of courage he could, but was quickly finding that the Patriot might not be the badass he believed. She smacked his lips with the flat of the blade. "But please," Ricky said, trying to pull away from the cold steel. "This was just a prank. No one even got hurt. I just wanted to show what I was capable of, okay? I fucked up. I get that now." Behind her, as if a dam had been broken, more soil began flooding in through the crack. Tiny pink bodies writhed around inside the growing mound of earth, like a network of pulsating veins. The longer Ricky gazed into the split, the more he could see. Hundreds, maybe thousands, overlapping one another in a viscous frenzy. The blade drew across his bottom lip in a neat line, making him cry out. Ariel palmed the dirt into his mouth, held it shut as grit slid down his throat like thick oatmeal. He could feel the worms inspecting his esophagus, excited travelers in a new land. Desperately, his body fought to expel these invaders by sending them out the way they came, but another set of hands lifted his head up, forcing him to either choke or swallow as best he could. Satisfied he downed most of it, Ariel pulled her hand away. Hot blood dribbled from his mouth. There was nothing cool or fun about tasting his own or watching her lick it from her fingers like leftover syrup from a treat. Leaning down, she pressed the tip of the blade into the space above his right eye, making a little tent out of the eyebrow, whispered, "Keep him open." Ricky's genitals attempted a hasty retreat into his pelvis as Ariel's eyes withdrew into her skull, leaving him staring down twin blackened tunnels. With her left hand, Ariel removed her lip rings, dropped them into her coat pocket. The skin of her lower jaw flowered open, revealing crooked teeth set in a diseased gum line. Where he expected there to be reddish tissue was instead a corrugated surface pocked with craters, leaking dishwater slime. She slipped a silver hook from her messy auburn bun, and with the precision of an expert surgeon, loosened the skin of her cheeks before peeling upward on the dangling chains and removing the rest of her face. Ricky stared at the crude, coal-colored approximation of a human head watching him, all poorly sculpted angles and weeping, ulcerous pits. Lovingly, Ariel hung her face from one of the sconces, sliding two of the steel talons through the eye holes. As if this were their unspoken cue, the remaining members of the nursery removed their own clothes and piercings, stripped their skins and draped the empty flesh with more respect and reverence than Ricky ever had for his own. The hunky farm boy with the dermal studs slid a finger through each of the open holes that ran his jawline, removing everything, including the scalp, in such a swift motion, Ricky thought he was witnessing a Grand Guignol magician's act. Next was the woman with the pile of dreadlocks. Close up, Ricky could see the barbells that decorated her scar like a railroad track. She pulled each out before drawing upward on the dangling sword affixed to her belly button, unzipping herself from navel to sternum. These were more than scars and ornaments of the flesh, Ricky realized. They were locks to their body's secret selves that could only be opened with blades. Ricky watched in awe as bigger worms traveled the charred, honeycombed ruins of their true forms. He'd been so enraptured that it wasn't until something made a balloon animal of his intestines that Ricky remembered. You've got your own tenants, buckaroo. He tried to curl into the fetal position to alleviate the needling in his guts, but it only seemed to enhance the feeling of abdominal tearing. Without warning, Ariel drove the blade into his stomach with a wet thunk. Limbs spasming, Ricky's bladder betrayed him. He mewled as urine pulled underneath him. He transformed into a pulsing sack of pain. This wasn't how the night was supposed to go. He was supposed to be the harbinger of horror, not some sniveling victim. And this was so much worse than what he'd planned, wasn't it? No one was going to be seriously injured. He just wanted to remind people that their corporatized horror wasn't cutting it. That real fear came from real danger. And most of all, he wanted to prove to his terrified of life parents, albeit posthumously, that he had to show the world you weren't afraid of it. Except now, Ricky wasn't doing so well on that front. He watched in terror as Ariel replaced the knife with more soil, more maggots. The others crouched beside him, made orifices of his armpits, parted the tender muscle between his legs and groin like sticky theater curtains. Nerve endings flared in unreal agony. He tried to focus on the stars, anything that could help him disassociate. But with every second came a new jolt of pain that made his body quake. One or many of the worms, Ricky couldn't tell, twined around the muscles behind his eyes, tugging them away from the sockets. His mutilation went on for what felt like an eternity, but that night, as his body became a bustling colony of worms, before the constellations above collided and collapsed along with his sanity, and the last of his blood spilled to the filthy concrete floor, Ricky Olson learned the true definition of what it meant to be fucking brutal. All Hallows' Edge, written by Anthony Trevino, music by Snake Oil.
Lives are all decline. I'm holding for more time. Damn it!